So I was toying with what the precise name of the topic for today's shiur should be. So originally I thought it would be the truth and myths about Mishloach Manos. Then I figured that was a little bit too negative, so we don't want to turn everybody off. So we'll just stick to the truth about Mishloach Manos. At first glance it sounds like a really very simple shiur, not much to talk about. Mishloach Manos, we all know, pretty simple. Take away to Hamitash, you throw a little bottle of wine, recycle the bottle of wine you received last year and hand it off to the next person. And I've always been very tempted to put a little simon on my bottle of wine and see how many years it takes until that bottle makes it back to me. But I thought we would talk a little bit more on a serious note, as serious as we can get a week before Purim, a little bit more on a serious note about some of the halachas that do govern Mishloach Manos. And believe it or not, although superficially it appears to be a very simple mitzvah to perform, there is actually much lumdus, much halachic discussion, much debate about some of the intricacies of Mishloach Manos. So let's try to see how we can perform this mitzvah in the most appropriate manner. So our sukkah, our topic begins on the Maar Mekomos, everybody has, on the first of the Maar Mekomos. It's a comment from the Gemara Maseches Megillah, where the Gemara is commenting on a pasuk in the Megillah. The source of Mishloach Manos appears in Megillah's Esther explicitly, as do all the other celebrations of Purim. The Megillah says explicitly that the days of Purim are days of Mishloach Manos, days of Matanos Lavyonim, giving gifts to the poor, days of Seud, of Mishta, etc. So the Gemara comments, Tani Rav Yosef, U'mishloach manos ish l're'ehu, shtei manos l'ish echad. So Rav Yosef tells us a chiddush, that how many manos, how many portions of food must one give to perform the mitzvah? Mishloach manos is a lashon rab in the plural, and therefore a minimum of two gifts to how many people? L're'ehu. Re'e was written by lashon yochid in the singular. Therefore the basic mitzvah mishloach manos are two gifts of food to one individual. This is in contrast to the mitzvah of Matanos Lavyonim, we're not really going to speak about today, but the mitzvah of giving gifts to the poor. So there the halacha is quite clear, it has to be actually to two poor people, because it says in the plural Matanos Lavyonim. So concerning Mishloach Manos, two gifts, two food items to one person, that is the mitzvah. So the first question we're going to deal with is probably something that we've all bumped into in the course of the years of Mishloach Manos, either on the giving side or on the receiving side. It's late in the day, and we have received so many Mishloach Manos, we have no idea what to do with it. I guess if Purim would have fallen out around December time, it would have been a little bit easier, but it is a month before Pesach, and as we all know, when that 86th Hamitash comes in, and you have no idea where to put it, now what? So the person comes to you 5 minutes before Shkia, before sunset, at the end of the day, and they say, I'm relying on you, this is my Mishloach Manos, I haven't given to anybody else, this is make it or break it. And I say to the person, listen, don't do any favors, please take it back, I appreciate your gesture, has that other individual fulfilled Shaloch Manos or not? So if we take a look at the second of the sources, Vim Shaleach Manos L'Re'eyu, Vu Eino Rotze L'Kablom, if I send Mishloach Manos to somebody, and they're not particularly interested in receiving it, oh mochelo, or they say to me in a nice way, ich bin moichel, I'm moichel forgoing the Shaloch Manos this year, don't worry about it, yotza. So this is actually a quote out of the Ramah, who is commenting on the Shulchan Aruch. The Ramah tells us that one would fulfill the mitzvah of Shaloch Manos, even though nobody actually received the Mishloach Manos. So notwithstanding this psach of the Ramah, there are other poskim who disagreed with this psach. There are others who said no, that you better find somebody else quickly, because one cannot fulfill the mitzvah unless the person literally received and benefited from the Shaloch Manos. And the question is, what exactly is the issue? What exactly is the point of contention between the poskim? Should this be a valid way of fulfilling Mishloach Manos or not? The Chasam Sofer writes in the Tshuva that this seems to touch upon really the basics, really the ABCs of what the mitzvah Mishloach Manos is all about. Do we ever stop and ask ourselves, why is there a mitzvah Mishloach Manos? After all, I mean, it's always nice to be friendly and to give somebody else some food, but what is it unique about Mishloach Manos? Why is it that Chazal instituted Mishloach Manos as such a major component of the celebration of Purim? So if one looks at the earlier poskim, there seem to be two very different approaches as to what the goal, what we are trying to accomplish with the mitzvah of Mishloach Manos. There are some who maintain that Mishloach Manos is really an extension of the mitzvah of Sudas Purim, that I am obligated to eat a suda, to eat a meal, a festive meal on Purim. And likewise, I have to make sure that everybody has a festive meal. Now, for that reason, in fact, Chazal instituted Matanos Lavyonim, particularly geared toward those who are poor, who are not able to afford a meal, that's true. But even those who are able to afford a meal, perhaps a person didn't have food ready, perhaps something came up, didn't have a suda, and doesn't have the ability to eat. So we make certain that everybody's going to be covered with the Suda's Purim. So if I go around and I send you something, and you send him, and he sends him, so eventually everyone's going to be covered, and everyone will have a Suda, albeit a bare minimum Suda, to sit down and enjoy on Purim. So the goal of Mishloach Manos is really just a way to enhance that the entire Jewish people, to the best of their ability, fulfills their obligation of Suda's Purim. If that's the case, that the emphasis is on Suda's Purim, that is going to govern some of the details of the halachas, as we're going to see. But there was an entirely different approach that is suggested. It's actually a fascinating individual who suggested the other approach, a man by the name of Shlomo Alkabitz. Rav Shlomo Alkabitz was very famous for many reasons, but perhaps the most famous is that he wrote the L'chadodi, the tefillah that we say in Kabbalah Shabbos on Friday night, was written by Rav Shlomo Alkabitz. You can check next Friday night the Rashi Tevos, the beginning of each paragraph starts with Shin Lamed Mei, spells out the letters of his name, Shlomo HaLevi. So Rav Shlomo Alkabitz suggests that maybe there was a different reason, entirely different reason for Mishloach Manos. Maybe Mishloach Manos is not geared towards practically providing for a Suda, but rather simply to provide goodwill and good cheer throughout the day on Purim. After all, we know that in the days preceding Purim, the original miracle of Purim, there was a little bit of discord, there was a little bit of bickering and arguing within the Jewish people, and even Haman picked up on that, actually describes the Jewish people as being a Yeshno Amecha Mufuzar or Mufurad Ben Ha'amim. A nation that is scattered, a nation that is divided, a nation that is not united in one goal. And in order to correct this, in fact, in the days of Mordechai v'Esther, what had to take place was Lech Knosos Kol Yehudim. There had to be a unity, there had to be a gathering together of tefillah and tshuva. And as such, Chazal wanted to mark that within the celebration of Purim. And we want to do whatever we can to make people happier and friendlier on Purim. There's nothing more beautiful that I always find on Purim. It's just watching people go from house to house and walking through the streets and handing little baskets of Mishloach Manos. Again, is anybody going to actually sit down and eat that at the Suda? Quite possibly not. But nevertheless, the good cheer and the friendship that is brought about, or should be brought about, through the Mishloach Manos, clearly is in the air and in the spirit of Purim. According to that understanding, that Mishloach Manos is not geared so much practically towards the Suda, but more towards almost a feeling of goodwill, that may also govern Hilchos Mishloach Manos, albeit in a little bit of a different vein. The Chasam Sofer suggests in his tshuva that perhaps that's the issue that the poskim are discussing. Can I give Shloach Manos and have it, in a sense, be rejected and being forgiven, not to receive? Can I fulfill the mitzvah or not? If the mitzvah Mishloach Manos is really geared towards Suda, so then one could argue, if I didn't practically give the person something that they could use for the Suda, again, they're not necessarily going to use it for the Suda, but if they couldn't really truly use it for the Suda, they didn't really put it on the table and potentially use it, so then it's hard to envision one could fulfill the mitzvah in that manner. But if the goal of Mishloach Manos isn't so practical, but the goal of Mishloach Manos is more just geared towards friendship and just cheery feelings in the air, so then that's great. I say to you, here, I brought you a beautiful Shloach Manos, and you say, I appreciate it, thank you for the gesture of friendship, and please give it to somebody else in a nice way. So then that also creates friendship. That also creates the chibah, the love, and the dearness that's supposed to be created through the mitzvah of Shloach Manos. So claims the Chasam Sofer, at the end of the day, what really matters is what exactly is the goal of Shloach Manos. Is it really truly Suda-oriented, or is it friendship-oriented? If it's Suda-oriented, it has to result practically in food being given and being received. If it's more friendship-oriented, then we can be a little bit more lenient about this question. This issue, just how much is Mishloach Manos linked to the Suda of Purim, perhaps is the source of another discussion that the poskim have, of the third of the sources, a comment of the Bir Halacha. The Bir Halacha was written by the Chofetz Chaim. It's the longer notes on the side of the Sefer Mishneh Berurah. So the Sefer Bir Halacha, the Chofetz Chaim quotes the following question. Chayav l'shloach l'chaver, one is obligated to send Shloach Manos. Ha'chay Adam uchiach min Rishalmi. The Chay Adam, was in the late 1700s, early 1800s, brings a proof from the Rishalmi. Dim shaleach la'oshir davar pachos, eino yotze b'yidei Mishloach Manos. If a person sends a Mishloach Manos to a wealthy individual, and he sends something that wealthy person would never ever put on his table, he would just never serve it. So says the Chay Adam, we're not so sure that the person who sent it fulfilled the mitzvah of Mishloach Manos. V'chein mashma b'ritva, and the Chayyadam, the Chavetz Chaim quotes that the Ritva, one of the earlier Rishonim, seems to say the same thing. The figures achashah b'gemara, he seemed to derive this from the Gemara itself, this chumra, this stringency, that Mishloach Manos has to be geared towards the recipient, something that the person would actually use. Achein shar poskim l'hizkir adav hazeh. The Chavetz Chaim notes that the other poskim do not mention this, and therefore v'nochem nizor b'zeh l'chatchila. He says that the correct thing to do is to try to gear your Shalach Manos towards something that the person would use, but if b'di'evit, if after the fact you send something to someone, even though they would never put that on the table, it's hard to say you weren't yotzei the mitzvah. What is this issue? What is the issue that the poskim are debating, whether the Mishloach Manos has to be something that's fit, really truly to be used by the recipient at his meal? So it seems to be once again the same issue, namely, just how practical is Mishloach Manos? Is Mishloach Manos geared towards that the recipient is really going to use it? I mean, at least almost kind of use it. So if I send him something that he would never ever serve at his meal, how can you call that Mishloach Manos? But if the goal of Mishloach Manos is not so practical, but rather just to spread some goodwill and cheer, so if the wealthy individual realizes that I'm trying to make a gesture of friendship, even though my standards of Mishloach Manos may not be up to his standards of a suda, but still, the goodwill and the cheer and the smile are going to be present, and maybe that's sufficient to fulfill the mitzvah of Mishloach Manos. So again, the same theme repeating itself, just how practical oriented, how much do we have our eyes on the su'uda, and how much not. There is an interesting question that the later poskim, really contemporary poskim, discuss. How much do we relate Mishloach Manos to the notion of a su'uda, as we're mentioning at this point? The Rambam seems to say that the mitzvah Mishloach Manos is so much a part of the Su'uda that the Rambam actually puts together in the same halachas as Su'udas Purim, and the Rambam formulates it as being almost an extension of my Su'uda. I can't sit down to the Su'uda on Purim knowing that there are other Jews who don't have a Su'uda, and therefore the Rambam describes when you sit down to your Su'uda, what you're supposed to do is mechalek misu'udas le'acherim. You're supposed to share your su'uda with others, namely take some of the food off of your plate, off of your serving table, and send it to others. That's what Mishloach Manos really is supposed to be. According to the Rambam, Rabbi Soloveitchik had an interesting idea. Rabbi Soloveitchik suggested that according to the Rambam, it's a little bit strange what we do today. Most of us send the Mishloach Manos first thing in the morning, and we don't sit down till our su'uda until 4 or 5 o'clock in the evening, in the afternoon. So the Rav argued that's not really the way the Rambam is describing the Seder Hayom. I don't know if the Rav was saying when now doesn't fulfill his mitzvah Mishloach Manos, but it's just the idea, the philosophy behind the mitzvah. If it's really suda oriented, so it should really be an extension of one suda, one should actually sit down to the suda, and then in the middle of the suda say, oh great, wonderful, I just buy fish, I just make a little package, a little doggy bag, and send it to the neighbor. That would be the ultimate Mishloach Manos that the Rambam describes. So according to the way the Rav is portraying the mitzvah Mishloach Manos, it's almost a mitzvah that should be done later in the day, 5, 6 o'clock, rather than at 9 o'clock in the morning. It's interesting because it's in the other total extreme. Rav Moshe Sternbach, the Rabbanim in Yerushalayim today, so he writes in his Sefer about Achos Purim that he thinks the exact opposite. Namely, he says that perhaps you should give Mishloach Manos before you have your Suda, because we have a general rule in Halacha that you're not supposed to sit down and eat a meal before you do a mitzvah. You're supposed to read the Megillah, then that's why we read the Megillah first and we break our fast afterwards. This year it's not relevant, this year it's Motzei Shabbos, but in a normal year we don't break our fast before reading the Megillah, because you're supposed to do mitzvahs first and then eating later. So Rav Sternbach suggests it would be inappropriate to sit down to your Purim Suda before you did your mitzvah, so you should give your Mishloach Manos specifically before the Suda. So now you could pick and choose, either you go the Rav's approach or Sternbach's approach, you can't have it both, they're contradictory. One says you should eat your Suda first and Mishloach Manos later, one says Mishloach Manos first and Suda later. I'd say, Eilu ve'eilu dibre Elokim Chaim, as long as somehow by the end of the day, by the time the sun sets on Purim, you ate your Suda and you had Mishloach Manos, so you would be able to your obligation. But again, at least in an interesting conceptual way, there are two different approaches as to what the goal of Mishloach Manos is all about. This halacha of Mishloach Manos, what exactly has to be given in terms of what we call in halacha the chefza, the object, what type of an object has to be given for the purposes of Mishloach Manos? So we take a look at the fourth of the sources, the Shulchan Aruch, who is quoting primarily from the Rambam on this. The Shulchan Aruch in the fourth of the sources tells us, Chayev l'shloch l'chaveiro, a person is obligated to send his friend, Shtei manos basar, o shel bine ochlim. One can send either two pieces of meat, And presumably a person is going to have a flesh at Purim Seudah, like the halacha is supposed to be. One is supposed to have basar on Purim. So he can send two different cuts of meat, two different pieces of meat, or two different types of meat. Oh, shnei minei ochlim, it doesn't have to necessarily be meat. It can be other kinds of foods as well. So just that is an interesting note from this line of the Shulchan Aruch, which is a quote right out of the Rambam. This is dispelling one of the most common myths in Hilchos Mishloach Manos. And when I originally thought the title would be Truths and Myths, this was myth number one. The myth number one is, I don't know who started this one, but somebody told somebody at one time in the last 50 years that Mishloach Manos have to be made up of two different brachos of foods. And you can't fulfill the mitzvah. And people go wild over this. I get shilas, Rabbi, what bracha is this? Is this b'dievet okay? Because it's not two brachas. And according to the brachas B, it's this. And according to the brachas book, it's that. I said, relax, stop, hold it, 1 second. Last we checked, the bracha on all of meat is shahakol. And the Rambam tells us that as long as it's shnei minei basar, it's fine. And the Shulchan Aruch tells us if it's shnei minei basar, it's totally fine, l'chatchila. And therefore, I have to dispel that myth. There's, to the best of my knowledge, there's absolutely no source for that. What has to be done is that it has to be shnei monos, in the sense of, let's say a person, you want to send somebody a salami, and you cut the salami in half. I said, that's not shnei minei, that's just one salami. So you have to send them, I don't know, I'm not advocating eating salami, not necessarily the healthiest of all foods out there, could be the least healthy of all foods out there, but if a person wants to send meat, so you'd have to send two kinds of meats. You'd send salami and you send a piece of chicken or something. It would have to be two monos, it would have to be two separate distinct things, but of course there is absolutely no need, even the chadchila, to be certain that it's two different brachas. So the halacha is, shnei minei basar, shnei minei ochlim, etc. Now it's interesting because the description of the food that the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch use are fairly choshev, fairly significant types of foods. We're talking about basar, minei ochlim. At what point do we say that the food is so insignificant that it may not even suffice for the mitzvah Mishloach Manos? So this is a big question in the poskim, which is really a throwback to what we spoke about before. According to those who say that Mishloach Manos is really pseudo-oriented, one could argue that the only type of food that is really acceptable for Mishloach Manos is food that would make it onto the Suda table. Now again, it doesn't mean that the recipient is going to use it, but at least in theory, he could use it for Mishloach Manos. What if a person, just for argument's sake, gives the following type of Mishloach Manos? He gives a very, very small hamantasher that you probably wouldn't serve necessarily at a Suda, maybe you would grab as a munch during the day, a hamantash, and a little Hershey's chocolate bar or something. Now, the odds of those two things making it to your Suda, especially if you have a Fleshik Suda, are highly unlikely. The odds of those two things being served at any degree of significance, again, is probably not going to happen. Some posts can raise the question, is that really Mishloach Manos? If that's the case, if one really insists that Mishloach Manos are Suda-oriented, then we would have to reassess what exactly is really acceptable for Mishloach Manos. It probably would have to be something that in theory could be used for the Suda. Now, remember we started off with the first of the sources by saying that Mishloach Manos is Shtei Manos to Ishechon. One does not have to give Mishloach Manos to everybody. Now, it's a beautiful thing, it's a nice sort of gesture and friendship, and that's wonderful. One sends to friends, one sends to acquaintances, one sends even to strangers, that's even more beautiful. So yes, you know, that's a wonderful thing to spread the goodwill on Purim. But in terms of the bare minimum mitzvah Mishloach Manos, perhaps one could argue that one of the Mishloach Manos should be something that's really Suda-oriented. Now, again, different people serve different things in the Suda, but I think we're all familiar with the kind of, you know, very, very small kinds of token Shalach Manos. So I would recommend that one Mishloach Manos should be sent Kedasuchadin, really properly, should be something that a person can really, truly put on their table or not. What I like to do in our homes, we have Baruch Hashem, there are plenty of Mishloach Manos that are sent to many, many people. But what I do is, right after Kriyas HaMegillah, there's one real form of Mishloach Manos that I give to one person in the shul, and it usually is made up of something of kolkatz, some kind of platter of kolkatz, together with some, whether it's a kugel, or whether it's a chumus dip or something that a person really literally serve, a challah or something like that, someone really put onto the table, so that one can fulfill the mitzvah Mishloach Manos, I think according to all opinions that way. Then one wants to give more, so we can quote from Pesach, Alabar, Berezim, Meshubach, one wants to give more shachwas, that's fine, but one should try to at least, the chadchila, try to give one Mishloach Manos that's actually fit for a suda. I remember years ago, I had once announced in shul, about how I think everybody should try to give one makovet dika shalach manas, and I think I must have just slipped and said, for example, somebody should give one salami and one bottle of wine or something. So needless to say, Baruch Hashem, my beloved Balabatim, we had 65 salami sitting in the fridge between then and Pesach, of which I don't want to disappoint anybody, but I don't think my wife let us eat any of the salami, so I guess it wasn't as well assumed as I had said it would be. If we take a look at the fourth of the sources, so if we skip down to about, it's the fifth line, Hagah. First word line is Hagah, that's where the words of the Ramah begin. I think the fourth line. So the Ramah begins by saying, V'yesh l'shloch manos b'yom v'lo b'layla. One is supposed to perform the mitzvah b'shloch manos specifically in the day of Purim and not the night before. Now, the following night, we don't need the Ramah to tell us that it's not acceptable. It's not Purim anymore, unless you live in Yerushalayim or walled city. If you live in an unwalled city, like most of us do here, so that, I guess all of us sitting here do, so then one has to perform the mitzvah hayom on the 14th day of Adar. So to give Mishloach Manos after dark, after Shkia, so that clearly would not be a fulfillment of the mitzvah. So that is supposed to be done maybe od yom. Just as a reminder to everybody, not only is Mishloach Manos supposed to be done by yom, the suda is also supposed to be eaten by yom. One has to be careful to eat the Suda's Purim still in the daytime. One can continue the meal into the night, that's all right, but the bulk of the meal, the meat, and the washing, the meat, the main part of the meal should really take place before sunset. This year we get an extra freebie on this one because Congress decided to change the clock on Purim night. It's probably going to make things a little bit confusing for people, but it does give us the extra hour. It cuts out an hour of sleep the night before, but it does give us an extra hour in terms of the Suda. But in terms of Mishloach Manos also, one has to be certain to give the Mishloach Manos in the day, not at night. But one cannot give the Mishloach Manos the night before either. So a lot of people think that, well, it's already Purim, it's already had the Megillah, so let's get things out of the way and start to give Mishloach Manos. That's not acceptable. It has to be Bayom. The Megillah says explicitly, Yemei Nishta V'Simcha. The Gemara tells us that we have a tradition that all the mitzvahs of the Suda, Mishloach Manos, etc., have to be done Bayom, V'lo Balayla. The only thing that we also do at night, of course, is Kriyas Megillah, but the other mitzvahs are only done in the daytime. This just parenthetically raises somewhat difficulties for us, specifically concerning the mitzvah of Matanos Levyonim. Very often we don't have the ability to perform Matanos Levyonim in the classic sense. Sometimes we do, sometimes the Aniyim do knock on the doors, do come to shul on Purim, but sometimes people live in places where the Aniyim aren't literally collecting on Purim. And this raises the question how to perform this mitzvah. So what we do is as follows, that the money is actually collected beforehand, but it's not distributed until Purim. So again, there are different Rabbanim and different organizations have different mechanisms set up that the money is actually distributed on the day of Purim on behalf of those who put the money forward before. And so if a person pledges X amount of money today, then the money is distributed on Purim day proper. That would be a fulfillment of the mitzvah of Matanos Levyonim. Sometimes the fulfillment, just the practical, technical way of doing that mitzvah today gets a little bit confusing. Some money is, again, different organizations do it differently, but some organizations like to distribute some of the money in Eretz Yisrael, so that becomes a little bit tricky, because you want to make sure the money is distributed in Eretz Yisrael beyond Purim. Beyond Purim means on the day that it's Purim, both for the people who are giving the money and for the people who are receiving the money. So what that means is, let's say, for example, next Sunday, so the money is being distributed, if it would be distributed in Eretz Yisrael at 8 o'clock in the morning, next Sunday morning, even not in Yerushalayim, even on the days that keep Yadala on the 14th of Adar, the money is distributed at 8 o'clock in the morning, but that's going to be 1 o'clock in the middle of the night, America time, and I'm either fast asleep or dancing at a Purim Chagiga, but it's still Laila, and Laila is not acceptable. So we want to push the money to be distributed late. The problem is, if we distribute the money, 2 o'clock in the afternoon, New York time, and it's already 9 o'clock at night, Eretz Yisrael time, it's already too late, it's after Purim. So, but a lot of organizations, including the one that I, one of the organizations that I deal with in terms of distributing money on Purim, so they have a time down to a science. The money is distributed at 2 p.m. Eretz Yisrael time, which usually there's a 7-hour difference. I don't know what happened with the time this year. I'm not sure whether the clock's going forward, back, or inside out. But usually at a regular year, it's always distributed exactly at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. People come, wherever the Aniyim are coming, are at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, which is 7 o'clock in the morning, which is ready after sunrise here. So it's after sunrise here, before sunset there, and everyone's yotzei l'chaladeus. Again, this is a little bit of high technology in order of distributing money. In the olden days, the mitzvah matanos levyonim was a little bit simpler. Nebuchadnezzar came and you gave him whatever he needed. Bizman hazem, money's wired, money's going into accounts, money's moving all over the place. Nobody ever really sees the money, but the money is being distributed to the ani on your behalf on the Yom HaPurim. So again, we've high-teched a little bit the mitzvah of Matanas Nevyonim, but Mishloach Manos has the same concern. It's supposed to be given on Purim itself. So again, sometimes I know that there are some shuls that start distributing, people start already giving Mishloach Manos already today, but some people like to bring another Tamidim, will bring Mishloach Manos 3 weeks after Purim. But the bottom line is, one Mishloach Manos at least should be given on Purim during the daylight hours of Purim in order to perform the mitzvah properly. We take a look at the fifth of the sources. So the Mishneh Berurah, written by the Chofetz Chaim, continues to tell us some of the other details as to what types of items can be used for Mishloach Manos. So minei ochel, it has to be food. Velo begadim, you can't give clothing. It's a wonderful mitzvah tzedakah to give somebody clothing, but that's not Mishloach Manos. Ushar devarim, other kinds of needs are also not Mishloach Manos. V'udim mashke deshaper dami deshtir b'chal achila. But a drink would be acceptable. That's what the meaning is. Many people give a bottle of wine as one of the two manos, and that's fine. The chen sagi, it's also acceptable. Be echad ocha, be echad mashke. That it doesn't matter if you give two items of food, two items of drinks, one food, one drink, anywhere. As long as bottom line is you ended up with something edible and drinkable, so two manos would be acceptable. Uba'inan shiya min ochel hamavushal. However, the Mishneh Berurah says it should be something that's cooked already, something that's edible. Lo basar chai. You're not supposed to send him a raw chicken. The Mishloach Manos haroi miyad yachila mashma. That the word mana means something that's edible, something that's a portion, be able to put onto the table right now. For Yeshomim, there are those who disagree. They came into shachlet for royalist basho miyad shari. Some say if you send them a live animal, maybe that's a problem. But if you send, probably not going to happen too much here. But if you send them a piece of chicken, even though he has to then subsequently cook it, so that would still be okay. So there are different opinions about this. Again, most of us don't do that. Most of us send already pre-packed or pre-made in our own homes. Everything should be ready and ready to go right away. So again, so we have a little bit of an understanding in terms of what the goal of the mitzvah is, either pseudo-oriented or reyus or friendship-oriented. We saw that impacts a little bit on some of the details in terms of can the person, in a sense, tell you, don't bother, you know, I'm not interested in your Mishloach Manos. We saw about how this impacts giving something to somebody who's wealthy and maybe wouldn't even eat this kind of a food. We saw how some of the issues relate us to the time of the Mishloach Manos as well. Right. It's the wrong day. It's a different day. Right. There are different opinions in the poskim. Very good point. There are different opinions in the poskim concerning Matanos Lavyonim. Can I fulfill Matanos Lavyonim if I give money to someone in Shushan Purim? Because for him it's Purim, or for me it's not Purim. So there are different opinions. Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach was of the opinion that that's also acceptable, and others disagreed. So that's why some organizations rely on that, and others don't. Right. So what we do in our shul, when we collect both for Matanos Lavyonim and Mishloach and for Mos Chitim later on, a couple of weeks from now, so what we do is as follows. Some of the money is given locally, like in Yerichah, and some of the money is given to Eretz Yisrael. So what our practice has always been is that the money that's distributed on Purim we give to not in Yerushalayim because of that concern, and the money that's given for Mos Chitim is usually given in Yerushalayim. Unfortunately, tzarchei amcha merubim. There are many aniyim both in Yerushalayim and outside Yerushalayim, so the money does end up getting distributed equally, evenly. But again, there are others who disagree. Others who said that it doesn't matter for Yerushalayim, Bnei Brak, it's all the same in terms of Matanos Lavyonim. Even though it's not Purim for you, that would also be okay. So there are different opinions about that. There's one thing that's conspicuously missing from this discussion as to what has to be given for Mishloach Manos. So we spoke about just how pseudo-oriented it is. We spoke about food. We spoke about drinks. There, to the best of my knowledge, and this is myth number two about Mishloach Manos, nowhere does it say that there has to be a theme for Mishloach Manos. So even though my kids have been bothering me since last Purim for what the theme is going to be, and for the last 51 weeks I've been telling them, don't worry, what's the rush? When they shepherded me again yesterday, I said, still, don't worry, what's the rush? And they said, Abba, it's the rush already. It's time. So sometime in the next 6 days, hopefully my wife will come up with another good theme, because that's my role in the house is to say the shiurim. Her role is to think of what to put in the Mishloach Manos. So we have a good partnership going. So we continue in the sources. The sixth of the sources. So the Shulchan Aruch quotes a practice that should be followed. We'll see in a moment what exactly that practice means. Isha chayeves b'matanos lavyonim u'mishloach manos ki'ish. That a woman is obligated in both of these mitzvahs, both giving money to poor people on Purim as well as mishloach manos, to the same exact degree as a man is obligated. And the question is, first of all, do we understand why that should be so? And number two, how does that play out practically? So in the seventh of the sources, the Mishnah Berurah tells us that the reason for this is very simple. Shekulon hayu bi'osu ha'neis, because women were obviously also saved by the same neis. They were in the same, their lives were in the same danger as the men were. And therefore, for the mitzvah of Purim, so the women have the same obligation as men. Therefore, women, of course, have to hear the Megillah, have to eat a Suda, and similarly, women are obligated to Mishloach Manos and Matanos Levyonim. Women are obligated themselves to be in joyful spirit on Purim and to bring joy to others on Purim. Everybody, it says the Jews, all the Jews, men, women, children, everyone is included. The cost of Magen Avraham, now the Magen Avraham is a fascinating comment. Magen Avraham lived in Eastern Europe in the 1500s. He has a fascinating comment. It says, Lo ra'isi nizharim bazeh. He says, I haven't seen that the women are so careful about this. He says, I'm looking around, I don't see all the women that give him Mishloach Manos. I don't see all the women are giving him Matanos Levyonim. So he says, what is the understanding? Why is that so? The Evsher Dafka Bi'amana of Al Isha Sheish Tabal Ba'al Mishalech Bishfilah Lekama Anoshim. So the Magen Avraham suggests that maybe what it means is, if a woman is not married, so then maybe I understand that she's obligated in Mishloach Manos Matanos Levyonim. But if she's married, so then it's understood that the husband's giving more than one Mishloach Manos, so one of the Mishloach Manos is on behalf of his wife. It's understood that the husband's giving more than one set of Matanos Levyonim. It's probably covered by the husband as well. The Mishnah Berurah says, I'm not so sure that it's true. Says the Mishnah Berurah, therefore he recommends that even married women should give Mishloach Manos, should give Matanos Levyonim. So what does this mean practically? So I think practically there are some people who still rely on this custom of the Magen Avraham that they don't specify this is my Mishloach Manos, this is your Matanos Levyonim. Family, the Sobolovsky family gives 50 Mishloach Manos, so it's understood that this is one of them for me, one for my wife, etc. And there are others who are machmer in this, there are others who say no, that one should designate that the one Mishloach Manos should be the wife is sending to one of her friends, and the wife should send some of the money to from her money, she should give to for the mitzvah of Matanos Levyonim. That's what we try to do in our family. I try to get the kids into this also, to mechanech the children as well, that everybody knows, everybody, each man, woman, and child for themselves in terms of Mishloach Manos, Matanos Levyonim. So I always tell my wife, one of these you should give to one of your friends. I tell each one of my kids, you pick one of the Mishloach Manos, you'll give to your friends. And then I go collecting my money from Matanos Levyonim for this. So that becomes a little bit more difficult. You know, the kid starts saying, I can't find any money. So what evidently happens is, Abba, could you lend me money so I can give my Matanos Levyonim? So I give them 100% loan here. I'm giving you a $10 loan, you know, payable in the next, 30 days from now, which of course I forget about it, they forget about. So the Aniyim are happy, they get all the money, and it all ends up coming from my pocket anyway, but at least I formally was machted at them the money. So they at least got a little bit of a chinuch in terms of the mitzvah of Mishloach Manos and the mitzvah Matanos Levyonim. On the eighth of the Maror Mekomos, the eighth of the sources, there is another practice that I don't want to call this one a myth because this actually appeared in Poskim, but it's probably not really accepted lahalacha. It is a practice that some people follow. The Tshuvas Binyan Tzion, the eighth of the sources, it comes from the Tshuvas Binyan Tzion. The Binyan Tzion was a Shalos of Tshuvas written by Rav Yaakov Ettlinger. Rav Yaakov Ettlinger was a great gadol in Germany in the 1800s. He was well known on his own behalf, but he also was the Rebbe of Rav Shimshon Fall Hirsch. The reason why his tshuvas are called Binyan Tzion was also for a fascinating reason, is that the very first tshuva was actually a response to, some of you may have heard of a man by the name of Rav Tzvi Hirsch Kalischer. Rav Tzvi Hirsch Kalischer was a Rav in Europe in the 1800s, and he came up with a grandiose idea that we're going to try to get people to return back there to Israel. Again, this is early 1800s, so just historically, this is way before the beginnings of even the very, very beginnings of the Zionist movement. We're going to try to get people to move back to Eretz Israel. For one goal, says the Tzvi Hirsch Kalischer, we're going to build the base of Mikdash, and we're going to start to bring Karbanos again. And he actually, believe it or not, he tried to get practically this done. He invoked the help of some wealthy Jews in Europe to try to pay off the Turks. The Turks were the ones, the Turkish sultans, they were the ones who controlled Harbayis at the time, and they offered money. And unfortunately, they were turned down. I guess they couldn't come up with enough cash to pay off the Turks, and the end of the day, it never happened. But before this, the plan got put on the side, so he went around asking several gedolim in Europe what they thought about this. Do they think this is practical, not practical? What are some of the shilas that have to be discussed to even begin to rebuild the base of Mikdash and offer Karbonos? So he sent shilas to Rabbi Kiv Eger and to the Chassam Sofer and to Rabbi Yaakov Ettlinger. So the very first tshuva that Rabbi Yaakov Elinger in his Sefer Shas HaTshuvos wrote was a response to Rav Tzvi Eshkalishers about all the halachic concerns and issues and bad people back and forth about this. And again, in the end of the day, nothing happened from it, but it's a fascinating discussion. So because of that first tshuva, he called the entire Sefer Shas HaTshuvos Binyan Tzion. The rest of the tshuvas have nothing to do with Tzion, nothing to do with Yerushalayim, nothing to do with anything. They have to do with Germany in the 1800s, but the very first tshuva had to do with Binyan Tzion, so he called the tshuvas Binyan Tzion. So in the Shas HaTshuvos Binyan Tzion, he has the following question, nistapik, he raises the doubt, im hevi ba'atzmo hamanas lo'edei shaliach. A very strange shaila. Can a person fulfill the mitzvah of mishloach manos if he doesn't send it through an agent? Why would one think you have to send it through an agent? It says mishloach manos. So l'shaliach means a lashon of an agent, of a representative. Maybe if you give your own shachmar shenai yotzei, you have to give it through a shaliach. Kevin dechsiv mishloach name of the binyan dafke deishlichus ayin sham. So the Mishtabura references that tshuva of the binyan tzion and tells you ayin sham. Take a look at that tshuva. Now, truth to be told, most people don't have shalos of tshuvas binyan tzion in their, you know, in their back pocket, but a lot of people do have Mishtaburas. So most people who have heard of this shaila heard it through the eyes of the Mishtabura. So when they read the Mishtabura, you get the impression that he raised the shaila, and he really didn't know what the din was, and he left it hanging. He's not sure. It's a suffik. Oh yeah, yeah, suffik shalachmanos. The chum, everyone, all in the yeshivas, it's a very common practice. People start sending shalachmanos to the shlichos. So if you ever see a yeshiva shem shalachmanos, what it means is as follows. You have three guys. So I want to give a shalachmanos to Reuven. I'm not going to give it to Reuven because Mr. Brewer said it has to be a shlich. So I call Shimon and I say, Shimon, do me a favor, hand this to Reuven. Reuven's 6 inches away from me, and Reuven's 2 feet away from me. So do my official shaliach in order to be yaitzeh. So there are those who follow this practice based on this Mishnah Berurah. The truth to be told, if you take a look at the Tshuva's Binyan Tzion, he raises the question, and at the end of the Tshuva, he writes that that's probably not true. No, it's very strange. How can there be a mitzvah Chazal instituted specifically through a shaliach? You can't do it yourself. I've never heard of such a thing. If you could do it through a shaliach, tal v'chomer, you could do it by yourself. I've never heard of such a thing. So the strict halacha is clearly one doesn't have to do this. But Moshe Feinstein writes in the tshuva that according to the absolute halacha, there's no need to do it in a shaliach. You can give the shalach manish yourself, and that's perfectly okay. But there are those who somehow, to the zecher, the fact that the binyan tzion at one time before was a shaila, so suddenly this has become I don't want to call it myth number three, but it's close to myth number three, that you have to do it on day shlichas. Again, if you don't follow this practice, that's also fine. If you follow it, it's also fine. So the bottom line is one for full shalach manos, technically speaking, either way. There is another issue that comes up in terms of shalach manos, in terms of both giving and receiving shalach manos, also, unfortunately, a common shaila, in the ninth of the sources, yesh b'sha'omer sha'ovel chayv l'shalach manos, that an ovel, somebody who's an avelus, and here avelus we assume means, if it's for a parent, it's for the entire year, or for other relatives, it's for the first 30 days for shloshim. If a person who's an ovel is still obligated to give him shloach manos. Why would one think he's not obligated? Because an ovel is generally supposed to avoid giving gifts, supposed to avoid giving gifts, supposed to avoid receiving gifts. So one would have thought that an ovel is not really obligated to this mitzvah, so the Shulchan Aruch says that's not true, that this is a real obligation, therefore an ovel is supposed to give. Hagod Ramah adds on, "Aval ein shochem la'ovel kol yid beis chodesh." But however, what one should not do is one shouldn't send mishloach manos to the ovel, because when it comes from the ovel's perspective, so he or she is obligated in mishloach manos. What are you going to do? So they have to give mishloach manos to somebody. Whereas, if a person is not an ovel, why should the non-ovel choose specifically to give to the ovel? They should give to somebody else. They should fulfill their obligation. They shouldn't give the unnecessary gifts to the ovel. So this is a source for practice that we try to follow this practice today, that an ovel should be giving one shalach manos, but should not be giving more than that. There's no need for him to give multiple shalach manos, and he shouldn't really be the recipient of the shalach manos. There is a question that the poskim raise about what if a person is not going to give the shalach manos to the ovel. He's going to say, I'm not giving to you, I'm giving to the family, I'm giving to your wife, to your children, I'm giving to the rest of the family. And the shalach manos is not geared, not directed towards the ovel. So there are different opinions in the poskim about that practice. So many people are lenient about this, that I'm not earmarking the shalach manos specifically to the ovel, so maybe there would be grounds to be a little bit more makel in terms of this. In terms of the ovel himself, so the ovel should really limit the amount of shalach manos. He should be yotzeh for sure, he should give one set of shalach manos. But the ovel proper should not really be giving multiple shalach manos because, after all, still an avelus is not the time to be giving so many gifts back and forth. So at this point, we, in a sense, finished the halachic part of today's shiur. I want to just speak just for a couple of minutes just about perhaps some of the hashkaf, a little bit of the thought process behind this mitzvah. Yeah, so I cut that off because it's a continuation. The Ramos continues speaking about that even though women are obligated Mishloach Manos, the Ramos recommends that men shouldn't be sending Mishloach Manos to women. He feels that would be a little bit inappropriate, but the specific case that the Ramos was talking about was if a girl was single. So to send Mishloach Manos to a single girl, so the Ramos was concerned that people may misconstrue that as thinking that the couple is actually getting married, and that would be a whole nother question halacha we try to avoid. So the Ramah quotes that practice that a man shouldn't be sending Mishloach Manos to single girls. So again, the original reason the Ramah really only went in one direction, and somehow the custom became, again, in the days of the Ramah, that was the custom, women sending to women, men sending to men, that was considered to be a little bit more tzanua. Again, it's not the absolute halacha, but that was the practice. So the question with these almost like these multiple shalach manos, or like the shul kinds of shalach manos, all these other kinds of things, I would say is as follows. Those who want to give these partnership kinds of shalach manos, that's beautiful and wonderful, you know, tov aleichem bracha. But I think that each person or each family should have one shalach manos that's given from one group, one individual to another individual. That way one can fulfill the mitzvah entirely. Otherwise, you almost have to say, well, I'm giving half the hamitash and you're giving the other half. I'm giving the cake part, you're giving the prune part. It starts to get a little bit sticky in terms of the Mishloach Manos. I would say one Mishloach Manos should be done properly, and everything else, all the themes and all the shit. So they could call somebody, but what they should probably do is they should call somebody and say, do me a favor and give a Mishloach Manos to Ploni, you know, on my behalf. That would be the better way to do it. So there are two points I want to just make concerning Mishloach Manos, which really go out of the realm of just the pure halacha in terms of just a little bit of a mindset, some of the things we should be thinking about in Purim. If we take a look at the second page of the sources, so the top of the page, number 10, the Rambam in Hilchos Megillah tells us, Mutav la'adam laharbos b'matanas avyonim, v'laharbos b'sudas of Mishloach Manos l'reyav. Says the Rambam, if you want to know where to place your real, you know, resources on Purim, so it's more correct to spend more money on Matanos Levyonim than on making yourself a fancy Suda, and then on making Mishloach Manos for your friends, the Reyav. Again, the Rambam is not minimizing the importance of a Purim Suda. The Rambam is not minimizing Mishloach Manos, but he's saying in terms of the hierarchy of mitzvahs, so there's no question, says the Rambam, that Matanos Levyonim should be on the top. If you have to spend a few extra dollars, so it's better to spend those extra dollars on Matanos Levyonim rather than just a little bit fancy Mishloach Manos for a friend. And then the Rambam explains to us why this is so. She'ein sham simcha gedola umefu'ara, because there is no greater simcha, no more beautiful simcha, el sameach la'aniyim b'yisomim v'amanas v'geirim. A person who adds simcha and adds joy to those who don't necessarily have the joy as much in their lives. Sham sameach lev ha'umlolim ha'elu, a person who brings joy to those who feel a little bit down. Doma l'shchina, in such a way a person resembles a Kadosh Baruch Hu, shenemar, l'hachios ruach shfal, l'hachios lev nikoyim. That's what a Kadosh Baruch Hu does. Kadosh Baruch Hu spends his time on Purim and the rest of the year being l'hachios ruach shfalim, trying to bring a little bit of good cheer and joy to those who perhaps need a little bit more. So the Rambam wants to put the mitzvah Mishloach Manos into the proper perspective. So yes, it's true, yes, it's an important mitzvah, and it definitely does add to the joy and the spirit and the sudas of Purim. But nevertheless, in terms of where our ultimate effort and resource should be placed, Matanos Levyonim are more important. On the 11th of the sources, there is a very famous statement of Chazal that at first glance doesn't at all seem to be related to Mishloach Manos. Let's read through the Gemara together for a moment and then get a little bit of a better understanding, I think, to really put really into the proper perspective what we're trying to accomplish with Mishloach Manos. The Gemara tells us in the 11th of the sources of the Masechah Shabbos, Vayisyatzvu b'sachtis ahar. The Pasuk is commenting, the Chazal are commenting on the Pasuk in Parshas Yisro, where the Jewish people are brought to Har Sinai and they're standing literally under the mountain. Of course, that phrase, b'sachtis ahar, is a very strange phrase. So this is the source from Rav Dibi Barchava Bechasa, Malamet Shekofa Kadosh Baruch Aleim Sahar Kigigis. It's as if Hashem picked up the mountain and placed it on top of them, like a barrel. That's where they were under, they were literally under the mountain, Besachta Sahar. Now again, whether this Maimon Chazal means it literally or figuratively, that's where, this is more of a Shavuos discussion. There's a lot to talk about in terms of what the significance of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in a sense, almost compelling us to accept the Torah. But for Amal Hem, Hashem says to us, Im Atem Akab Matar Mutav, if you accept the Torah, that's great. V'im Lav Shamtek V'raskam, if you don't, then you're going to be buried under the mountain. Amar Rav Acha Be'Yakov, Mikan Modo Rabba Li Araisa. Rav Acha Be'Yakov tells us, that here, from the fact that the Torah was given to us, in a sense, under duress, that's an excuse for us. Because if I sell a field, many of you may be learning Maseches Bava Basra in Daf Yomi these days, actually some of these sugyas are coming up about Modal, we just had the last couple of days. If I sell a field to you under duress, but if I told witnesses beforehand, listen, I'm about to say sell this fellow this field because he has a gun to my head, but I don't really want to sell him the field, so that's what's called in halacha a modah. And a modah has the ability to, in a sense, to cancel, to revoke any potential deal that's going to be made. So the Gemara has an interesting comment that the Torah was accepted under duress. And if Klal Yisrael turns to Hashem and says, wait a second, we didn't really want it. We were forced. You put a mountain over our heads. So in a certain sense, in terms of a pure monetary law, we have a claim that maybe we were forced into it. So Amar Rava, Rava said, well, don't think you're going to take a Kadosh Baruch to a Din Torah over this one. Ava B'chein says, Rava, Hada Kiblu B'mechash Ve'irosh. That even though the Jewish people, there was a little bit of a duress in the days of Shavuos, the days of Matan Torah, but the days of Purim, there was a complete and total willingness to accept the Torah. D'chziv, Right. Well, most of the people like Mordechai, right. That's right. But the Kabbalah said Torah, D'chziv, Kimu V'kiblu Ayehudim, Kimu Mashikiblu Kvar. So the original Kabbalah Torah was a little bit under the rest, but the subsequent one, the days of Purim, that was totally, completely done out of their own rata, their own free will. In the Tshuvas, Ksav Sofer, was the son of the Chasam Sofer, so the Ksav Sofer quotes this Gemara and says perhaps it's this Gemara that's ultimately behind the very institution of Mishloach Manos. What in the world does this statement of Chazaf do with Mishloach Manos? Explains the Ksav Sofer that when you see a person eating, and sometimes with a person perhaps in an inappropriate way drinking, you see a person eating, so you don't know exactly what the person's mindset is. People eat for different reasons. Sometimes people eat because they're very happy, and sometimes people eat because they're very sad. A person could eat, and nebuch, we know unfortunately people could drink, and they can wallow away in their sorrow, and they want to forget all their pain, all their being upset, and they'll think that they're going to be able to kind of, you know, cover it up with food and drink. So you can't always tell objectively when somebody's eating and having a suda what the nature, what the mood is really behind the suda. But says the Ksav Sofer, there's a good litmus test. How do you know? What's the barometer whether a person is happy or sad? It's very simple, says the Ksav Sofer. If a person makes a simcha, so you invite other people to your simcha. So you don't make a chasen and then invite nobody. You make a bar mitzvah, you want people to come, you want people to join you. When a person is very, very sad, very often a person wants to be left alone. So says the Ksav Sofer, a Jew sits down to a suda on Purim, we're not quite sure he's reacting to the events of Purim. So we're not quite sure, is he happy or is he sad? Because here it was great, we were safe from Haman, but oh my goodness, now we have the Torah to keep. Now we're stuck, we got into this again. So is the person happy or sad? So just because he's having a big meal and drinking doesn't prove anything to us. Says the Ksav Sofer, the only way to prove that the person is really Mekabel Torah B'Ratzon, do you invite others, do you share with others? So if a person is miserable, they don't send doggy bags to us. Person's happy, they want to send, oh, let me send you a piece of kugel for my suda. Let me send you some hamantashen. Let me send you a piece of meat. Let me send you a cup of wine. Let me share my joy with others. What Mishloach Manos is inviting others to your suda. That's when we quote it from the Rav and the Rambam. Keitzel chob suda zu. You sit down to have your suda, umechalek sudas lachem, and you spread a little bit, either literally or figuratively, of your suda to others. The mitzvah Mishloach Manos is our way of saying to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, not only did we re-accept the Torah on Purim, but we re-accepted it, B'lev Shalom, and we're not sad about it anymore. What happened in Shavuos, we had a mountain on our heads, you know, we got a little bit pushed into it, we're not quite sure what happened. But Kimu B'Kibla Yehudim, we are so happy and so excited to become once again your Avodah, once again to accept your Torah mitzvahs, that there's nothing we'd rather do than have a Suda on Purim. So perhaps for this reason, the Suda's Purim, together with the Mishloach Manos, really has a dual purpose. It's a celebration of the Nais, of course, the primary Nais of the Yeshua, the salvation from Haman, but it's also a Nais, it's also, I'm sorry, a celebration of Kabbalah Satorah. It's not all that different than the Suda that we have in Shavuos, also as a celebration of Kabbalah Satorah. Perhaps it's for this reason that the Poskim quote, that we have a custom before one sits down to eat the Suda, Lehudim Aysa Ora V'Simcha V'Sosim Ikar, the Poskim quote, Ora Zuv Torah, one should learn a little bit of Torah before the Purim Suda. because the proper context of the Simchas Purim has to be preceded with the Orazu Torah. So hopefully HaKadosh Baruch Hu should give us the Siyat Nishmaya, the ability to fulfill the mitzvah Purim, Kedas Uchadin, and it should become not only days of Sosam and Simcha in terms of Yeshua's, but should be days of light of Torah, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu should only bring for us the of Chai Yisrael, should be days of Ehudu Ma'isor, the Simcha, the Sosam, the Kar, came to Yabana. Do you want to?